I have an obligation to follow my truth, even though that other person may be bigger than me. But my truth, I'm obligated only to my truth. Right? It's a question. Am I obligated to keep my truth? Or do I have the right to say, well, it's only me? Who says that I have to really stress my point? Maybe I should be modest and give up my point of view and accept the other person's point of view.
Whole evolution of Kotsk Shisva, where there was a series of breaks from Rebbeim who were Kotsker and Rishnikov who never said that the Chayza wasn't bigger than they. The Chayza was big. I mean, if you hit Sigur Shana,
they still broke.
And the Chedusherin did break away from the Magid of Kotsk. And it was a Bedavka, it was a break. It wasn't just a sort of inertia that took them away.
So what you are bringing a proof, a historical proof, to the point of view that you are bound by your truth. Right? It's a very tachidush, by the way, that you are bound by your truth. I found in Haloche backing to it, I think in the name of the Ma'arik, you know, it's a shalit by Shavi Anafshayu Chaticho Disure. Let's say I have the power to say that, let's say, I think that the Shoichet didn't shecht correctly the chicken. We all saw it. And everybody says that it's kosher 100%. And I thought that the Shoichet stopped for a split second and it made the Shechita no good. So what is my din? Do I say, who am I? No. My obligation is to follow my truth. Not only that, Bezin is obligated to force me to follow my truth. That is Shavu Nafshayu Chaticho Disurah. What is Shavu Nafshayu Chaticho Disurah? You take upon yourself an Isur that everybody knows that it's not that way, but you believe that it is this way. So the Bezin force me to keep my deen. Right. Yeah? Oh, wait. So it's a machloikes. In the Meforshim, what is the reason for Shavei Anafshayu Chaticho Disurah? The more Ksuvis. So there is one opinion which says this Mekoyach HaNeder. Since you can be Machmir through a Neder any time, so that power of the Neder is the power for you to say the Shechit is no good. So really the court is forcing you to follow your own opinion because it's a Neder. Right. It's brought down by most of the Meforshim that it's not neder, like the Noida Biyudo says. So if it's a neder, so you should be able to come to a chocham and mevatel the neder. So he say it's not neder, it's neemones. Odom neemon alatzmo yoyser memeyo edim. A person has neemones on himself. Right? Meaning, legabe yourself, you are the most reliable source of truth. Nobody else in the world, a million people, aren't as strong as your own opinion. So I took it to this, what I thought was its absurd extreme. So what about if it's the other way around? What about if everybody sees that the piece of meat is straight and I see that it's kosher? Oh, so I found a Ma'arik, which is unbelievable. And he says, Eino chinami, beini levein atzmi, I to myself, right, I have a right to eat the piece of meat. That's lekule, right? That's already not lechumre. So according to this, for sure it's, I am bound by my own truth. Sure, I have a right to say, well, I'm not going to do it. But I also have a right, yes, to do it. What about the court?
Ma'arik. Are you talking about a perception of what happened during the Shechita? Or are we saying that if the Chazanish and Rav Moshe pass in a certain way, and I come up with another analysis, even an analysis with merit, that I should follow my
Well, of course you have to be a Bar Hochi, but that's pure Sechel. For instance, was the Zokin Mamre, he has a right to his opinion or he doesn't have a right to his opinion?
He does
have a right to his opinion. Except that the court tells him, once we pasken, once we vote, then the vote is stronger than the individual opinion.
Did he himself accustom himself to his own belief?
If there was a Sanhedrin?
Yes.
No.
Why?
No. Because that is the law of the Torah, that the majority creates the halacha. The majority creates the halacha. But we are talking at a time already that there is no majority. Right? And then each one is to make his own decisions. Is he bound by his decisions? Right? Another case. I think the mission is in Edios. Akavio b'ma'alaleil. The Chachomim wanted to put Akavio b'ma'alaleil in Cherem. Why? Because he argued against all of them. Right before he died, he called over his son and he told him, you don't follow my opinion. Why? Because I heard my opinion from the majority. And they heard it from the majority. Now it's, I thought I heard what I heard. And they thought they heard what they heard. So I did what I thought the majority said. But you only heard it from me. And they are more than me. That's what Akavim Memalalal tells his son. How do you understand that?
Then it's perceptual again.
No,
but the Rav's not talking about an analytic process where you say, where it's not coming to a decision by the usage of methodology, but it's simply a perceptual thing. So whether you're seeing that the animal shafted, or whether you heard right or didn't hear right. So we're saying, you heard one way, I heard another. Well, not, it's not a koyach hadrash or a koyach ha...
Why should there be a difference? Whatever I'm certain on, whether my certainty is what my rabbein told me, or my certainty is the methodology which I'm using, I came to a point of certainty. Mind of community, you're saying that there is a difference. Any point that is a decision that I can say I'm certain of, I'm bound by it. Of course, if you are not at the level, so of course you have to say, who am I? For instance, my doctor tells me one thing. I think otherwise. Did I ever take medicine? I think otherwise. So who am I to argue against the doctor? So it's logical that I have to realize that my opinion vis-a-vis the doctor is nothing. So the same thing. If Rav Shach says one way and I think another way, so it's logical to say, listen, this man has been learning for who knows how long. He said he's so many much better than mine, so I'm going to argue with him. There is a feeling that he's the expert and I'm not.
Right.
But, so that's something else. So, therefore, of course, I'm mevatel my opinion klape him. But once you reach a level that you are a bar hochi klape Rav Shach, right? Or like, listen, I mean, Reb Moshe's tshuvas all the time. He will bring down the Chasam Sofer. And then, first of all, the fact that Reb Moshe almost doesn't bring down Achroinim. How many Achroinim? Throughout, somebody told me that throughout the whole Reb Moshe's forum, right, the amount of Achroinim are minimal, the amount of Achroinim that he brings down. He just doesn't look at Achroinim. Why? He didn't believe in Achroinim. He didn't think that the Achroinim were big. He just didn't feel responsible for him. If they say one thing and he thinks another way, anyway he has to follow what he says. So what's the point of looking at Achroinim? He didn't see a point in looking at Achroinim.
So,
and even when he brings down, sometimes Chasam Sofer says this way, but I see it another way.
So how far back is that question?
So we have certain rules. We have certain rules, like the Rivosh says, that at a certain point they came to the realization that we are Achroinim and they were Rishonim, right? There is a famous Rivosh concerning his Rebbe, the Ran, that we came to a point that we realized that we are not at that level anymore, and who are we to argue, right? Or like the Beis Yosef said in Hilchos Mamrim concerning Damoy Roim and Detainoim, they came to a point when they said, we are not at that level anymore. It's like the argument between the myself and my doctor. Anyway, how can I argue with him? So they came to that realization at certain points in history. Right? So it's by the Tanoim and the Amoiroim and the Geoinim, and by the Rishonim and the Achroinim. In those times, there was like a gap that everybody felt after that they can't argue. However, by the Goyen felt that he can argue on Rishonim. And his Talmidim take the position of the Goyen equal the position of the Rishonim. I saw it brought down from the Talmid de Agro that they consider the opinion of the Gro equal to the Rashba or the Ramban. That's right. But that was the exception to the rule. The rule was that there was a gap and nobody else can argue. Alright? Now, so, if so, comes out, number one, that when a person is convinced of his truth, if he's at the level, if he's a Bar Hochi, he is bound by his opinion. He has no choice. He has to follow it, whether he likes to or not. Perhaps his natural instinct is, why do I need a fight for? But you are mechuyev to fight.
You were comparing it to Shavu Nefesh and Tichah Deisura, but that doesn't mean, just because it's mutter to me, that I can give it to my neighbor to eat.
For sure not. That's why I brought down the Akavya ben Malalel. He says, he said, I am certain. You only know it from me, so you are not certain. So, there is a majority against me. You can't listen to me.
But on the other hand, but I don't know about the Akavya ben Malalel. I know that we were saying once that people who have a Kabbalah that their family does, like the Rush, they can argue on the Rambam. If they have a Kabbalah, so fine.
Yeah, that is something.
Even though the Midrash maybe goes like the Rambam.
Right. You mean, so Akavya ben Malalel, how come he didn't tell his son to follow the Kabbalah?
Yeah, the Kabbalah.
They ask another question. Why does it say only before his death? The implication is that as long as he's alive, right, he was mechuyev to listen to his father. So what changed by his death? It's a similar question that you are asking. If there is such a thing as a Kabbalah in my family, we follow this and this. So the truth of the matter is that depends in what kind of halachas. In what kind of halachas. This idea that you follow the minhag of your family, this is only out of no choice. In the times of the Sanhedrin, there would be no such a thing. This idea that we say, well, as long as you follow your family, it's okay. This is only b'di'evit. What does it mean b'di'evit? Once we don't have a majority anyway, and you need a basis for your decision, and you don't know what's right and what's wrong, so we say, out of all the choices, Kabbalah is a possible choice. But here it was a situation when the majority said that you are wrong. It's not that we all have a right, like the Gemara says there, sometimes, narrow pashti, which means that a river can split in a lot of tributaries, right? That's what the Gemara says, which means that there can be one thing, and could be everything can be fit into MS. That you say, if my family does one way and the other family does another, they are both MS. They both stem from the same source. But in certain situations, it's either I am right or you are right. It's not that we are both following equal minhogim. So at that point, you have to follow the majority. That's what Kavi Malal said. And the reason why, while he was alive, that the son was mechuyev to follow him, so that already some mefarshim say that it's al kibudav, right? And the din of kibudav changes after misa. There is another getter of kibudav, so therefore, since the kibudav changes, we don't have that getter of kibudav doesn't apply legabe listening to him in Torah. Now,
if the gadol has to say his piece, now first of all, how do you pick? Then which gadol?
Which is your gadol?
Right.
Very difficult question, by the way. Very, very difficult question. This also is asked very, very often. How do I choose my rabbi?
And if you have a gadol, how do I accept his if this whole thing, like Kavi ben Mahal, right? His son, he told after his death, not to. So after the next generation, what are they? Are they going to follow the same thing? Are they not? Maybe he has the right to say it, but. Once he said it, and I agree, do I have a right to put that opinion forth to other people?
Once he said it, and I accept it, you mean?
Right. Because I have my side, I'm not on that level to take the side.
Okay, so listen to this, right, yeah.
Do you want to tell us about, in the cooler side, about the Beis Din? Does Beis Din force a person to adhere to his cooler?
Well, for sure not. Beis Din doesn't. The question was, does he have a right, the Chadre Chadorim, when nobody's watching him, to follow his own kule? That is the question. Even though he knows that everybody in the world tells him that he's wrong. But he's certain that he's right. And he's a Barhochi. That is the Chidush of the Marik, that it's okay. The court will give him Malkis. Right? Right?
But he has a mitzvah.
The mitzvah is only if he believes, right, that he can convince them that they are wrong, right. But if he knows that he can't convince them that they are wrong and he is right, well, then there is no more ochiyah.
Why would he do it by?
Because he is certain that he is right, but he knows that the other people are certain that they are right, and they are the majority. So what is his obligation towards his truth? So that's what I'm telling you, that even Lekule, the Shita Samarik is that you can rely on your own certainty, which is the Chiddush. But I'm trying to derive something from it. The idea that a person is bound by his own truth. It's like, if you have a certain insight into something, like a Novi who has a Nevue, so it can be Koiveshes Nevuoso. You're not allowed to be Koivesh Nevuoso. Why? Because if this is MS, you have to say it. You may hate the fact that you have to fight for your position, but if you are certain of a certain position, you just have no choice. You are bound by your own conviction that this is true.
Is the maskana coming out that if you hold a chumrah against the rove, which is when kula, then you have an obligation and a right to be manhig Yisrael in that chumrah. But if you're holding kula, everyone else is holding chumrah, then you don't
I'm just bringing down this halochah of Hashem and Hashem Hashem, just for the concept that truth binds you. That is the whole idea, that you see how far truth binds you, that even the cooler truth binds you. That you see even that concept. Even though some people argue, because as I told you, if Shavna Shech Adil Rasul is only al-sneder, so it won't work le cooler. But just the concept, you are bound by your conviction of what the truth is. So therefore, if two people have two contradictory opinions, and you say, but you are going to create a machloikes, is that a good enough reason? It's not a good enough reason. Because after all, I am bound by my MS and he's bound by his MS, so the outcome is that we have to fight and there has to be a machloikes. That's what I mean, that machloikes is inevitable. As a matter of fact, neither side would have the moral right to say, you know what, for the sake of peace, I'll give up my position. Do you have a right to do it?
So you're saying there's no compromise and there's no real...
Because in a case of certainty, there is no compromise. There is an incredible word of the Amik Dovor. The Amik Dovor says that by when Yisroi says, you will appoint judges, right? What's the lotion there? Called Yovoi Bisholoim, and everything will come out Bisholoim. That's what it says. You'll appoint judges, and everybody will come out Bisholoim. In Parshas Yisroi. So as the Amik Dovor, I don't understand. And when Moshe Paskin, it didn't come out b'sholoim. You hear? That's what it. So he says, you know what sholoim means? The Gemara says that there are two approaches. There is an approach of emes, and there is an approach of sholoim. There are two approaches. We only know that eventually, in Etaposuk in Zechariah, when the world will be perfect, emes and sholoim will meet each other. Right? But as long as the world is imperfect, it's either emes or it's sholoim. One of the two. What does it mean? Like, for instance, you know, the famous machloikes, also in Ksuvis. Hillel v'Shamay, are you allowed to lie to someone that his color is beautiful? Kalo no v'chasudo. Hillel oimer, kalo no v'chasudo. Shamay oimrim, v'shamay oimrim, kalo k'moishei. So what does Hillel say? If you have to lie? Right, because Hillel believes that when there is a contradiction between emes and sholoim, emes has to give room for sholoim. What does Shammai believe? That emes is higher than sholoim. Remember the Mishneh. Hillel oimer, hevu mital midov shel aroin. What was the nature of aroin? Compromise, sholoim. What does it mean to imply be like the talmidim of aroin? Don't be like the Talmidim of Moshe, because Moshe was Shammai's position, right? Yikoy vadin esohor. That's what he meant, right? Why? And what does it say? Oyev sholoim veroydev sholoim, which means his goal was sholoim. Oyev esabriyosu mekarvon la toiro. So, why do you bring the briyos close to toiro? For the sake of toiro, emes, or for the sake of briyos? What does it sound like? So what stands higher, sholoim, which is the well-being of briyos, or toiro, which is emes? Obviously, doesn't it sound like because he loves people, he brings them close to toiro. So for him, emes, sholoim overweighs emes. What does Shammai say? Asei toiros chokeva. This is a direct quote. What does it mean? Asei toiros chokeva. Don't give up emes for sholoim. Toiros chokeva, right? That's what it means. That was the stress of Shammai is always emes over sholoim. By the way, the Bali Kabbalah say that in the Zohar it says that at some point in the future the Aloha will be like Shammai. And everybody, did you ever hear this? And everybody said, why? What kind of what's going on? I mean, why should it change? It's poshut why it has to change. Because Leosid Lovoy, Emes and Sholem will come together. In an imperfect world, there is an antagonism, there is a contradiction between Emes and Sholem. One has to give to the other. Right? Like we have to make peace with the Palestinians. So we say, well, the truth is it's our land. But for the sake of peace, we'll compromise. Meaning, you only compromise for the sake of peace. There is no room for compromise in Emes. In Sholem, there is room for compromise, not in Emes. True? Therefore, Aaron HaKohen was the man of compromise. Moshe Rabbeinu was the man of Emes. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't compromise. That's... Yeah.
How does that translate, that compromise in Machlokes Bishon and Sol with Shvisus Keli or Sar Safas and things like that?
No, not in every Machlokes you can fit in this idea, but in a lot of Machlokes find this.
So in Aaron and Moshe.
Right.
Halacha, honestly, you should compromise halacha in order to...
Well, let me give you an example of how the opinion follows. This is from the Meshech Chochmo. This is the Meshech Chochmo. There is a machloikes. What's more expensive? Meshech Chochmo. What is more expensive? The oilas rio, right? Or the chagigo? Chagigo, the machloikes, right? According to Hillel, the chagigo is more expensive than the oilas rio. According to Shammai, the oilas rio is more expensive than the chagigo. Says the Meshech Chochmo, what's the machloikes? Says the chagigo is a shlomim, right? The oilas rio is kulo lashem. Oilo is kulo lashem, right? According to Shammai, what do you think is a more choshev korban, the oilo or the shlomim? Oilo, the oilo, kulo lashem, right? No compromises, no shloim, right? According to Hillel, shloim. So that's what he says. You hear how the overall outlook, you know, you mentioned before, if you have a preconceived notion of something, can that affect your haloche? Well, obviously yes, according to the Meshech Chochmo.
This is what a person values more. It's not on what the Torah meant. The Torah means that am I can't even have to rest on Shabbos or not, or Tzoros Tabas Asa or not. I want to make it easier in so they can go marry you.
No, Chas V'Shalom, that never applies. But the idea is that concept, that the center of things are people, right? And not Emes. Sholem is more important than Emes, right? That can affect your decision. That can affect your decision, right? Even in Halacha, like as I showed you the
Meshech Chochmo. What people value, but not what the truth is, not in...
Why?
The Machlokes by the Korban is what's more expensive, because what's more important, what do people value more?
What? So it means...
What the Torah meant, no.
Of course, that's the argument. What does the Torah mean? Oil and Shlomim, right? Even though oil is Kodesh Kodoshim, Shlomim is not Kodesh Kodoshim. According to Hillel, there is more value. The Ribbono Shel Olam loves more a Shlomim than an oil. Why? Because everybody's happy. You know, they get the Machazal say that. Because the Kohen is, and Hashemi, everybody's happy. Everybody's happy. Right? But that's Hillel's opinion, right? But this is all in our imperfect world. When we get to the perfect world, there won't be a contradiction between Emes and Sholem. I just want to conclude the Amik Dovers, he says. So what's if Shati says that Moshe was different than Aaron? He says the difference was that Moshe Rabbeinu saw Emes immediately. And the Aloche is, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, once you see the truth, there is no room for compromise. You can only compromise when you don't see the truth clearly. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, who had a clear view of truth, he could never compromise. This is what Yisroel meant. If you pasken, you'll never be able to compromise. You'll see the truth so fast that you won't be able to compromise. But if you allow the judges to make decisions, they won't see the truth so clearly, so they will be able to compromise, which means that the capacity to compromise... What?
Why would Moshe ever agree with this? If he holds it the way of Emes, then why should he ever agree that it should take the...
Surin of Hinami, by the way, you know, in Pasha's Dvorim, you know, what the Inuoisi, how does Moshe Rabbeinu say about the idea of Yisroel? That the fact that Klal Yisroel accepted it was a terrible blow to him. It was an affliction. It's fakir. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't happy with Yisro's idea. He only accepted it because the Klal Yisrael was at the level of accepting it. Meaning, Klal Yisrael was already developing the gap between themselves and Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why they accepted it. He wasn't happy with Yisro's idea. Yeah, why do you think it has to come from Yisro? If it was such a good idea, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't think of it. The Ribbono Shel Olam couldn't think of it. You need Yisro. The fact is that it wasn't a good idea. It was just the proper idea for the time, for their level.
If you extend this idea then to Hillel and Shammai, you can't say that Hillel's Radifa of Shammai, if you want to call it that conceptually, was at least as much a perception of the Emes, not because I don't know what to do, therefore I'm in Shalom, but that's the Emes. Or Hillel must have been calling the shots according to a perception of Emes, which included Shlomo. It couldn't be that Shammai saw Emes, Hillel Nevach, he couldn't see the Emes, so therefore he had to take the Shlomo. So it must be that, it can't be that he didn't have a clarity of perception.
But you see, there are two concepts of Emes. There is the absolute Emes, and the Emes which is connected with what Hashem wants me to do. That's also a type of Emes, toy. In other words, when according to Hillel, the man says to his friend, Kalo no vachasudo, and he thinks she's ugly, is that emes? In that sense of emes, it's emes. But it's a lie, right? She's ugly. You understand what I mean? But it's emes in the sense of it's the right thing to do, not in the sense of absolute truth that what he's saying is true. No, it's emes in the sense that is the right thing to do.
No, but they're arguing what's the right thing to do, correct?
Right.
So Shammai is saying the right thing to do is to praise her and what she has. So
exactly.
And he was saying the right thing to do.
Right. Which is emes. Emes is story.
The emes is say the lie.
Exactly. Now, so the lie becomes emes. So that doesn't mean emes in its absolute sense. It means emes in the behavioral sense. In other words, you behave in a derech or emes by saying a lie.
You see what I mean?
Fine. That is the emes. That is the way Hashem wants you to behave. Then that becomes the emes of Torah.
The Shalom stems from emes also.
Of course. But those are two aspects. There is the Shammai look. Right. And there is the Hillel look. Right. According to Shammai, emes is only what is not a compromise, what emes in its absolute sense, right? And Hillel sees emes in its relative sense, meaning emes in a situation when there is a contradiction between emes and Shalom is Shalom. That is the emes.
He redefines
it. It's not only that he redefines it. By the way, the same Meshe Chochmo says, listen to this machloikes. What was created first? Breishis bore Elokim es haShomayim ves Oretz. So what was created first? Shomayim first and then Oretz. Well, take a look at the second chapter of Genesis. B'yoyim bro Elokim Eretz veShomayim. So what was created first? Machloikes Hillel veShamay. Hillel says, first Eretz was created and then Shomayim. So Shomayim, no, you are wrong. Shomayim was created first and then Eretz. What's the Machloikes? You hear? Emes and Shalom. Shomayim is Emes, Eretz is Shalom. The Briya is the same Machloikis. Mam is the same Machloikis. It goes through a lot of Machloikis in this idea of Emes and Shalom.
So, coming back then to Moshe Rabbeinu and to the lower level judges, do we say that their compromising attitude then was a function of Emes?
Their compromising attitude was, since they didn't see the truth so clearly, so they weren't bound by it, then they can be flexible. When you are not bound by truth, but in other words, if you don't see the certainty of it,
truth can be compromised. We just said that there is that the truth can be compromised.
Well, the absolute. Wait. What do you mean that the truth can be compromised? You see, there are different situations here, right? Let's say. You see something clearly. This is a kosher piece of meat or a treifa piece of meat. Can I compromise, even though I'm certain? Like, you know, there's the famous story of a lady, an old poor lady, coming to a rov with a chicken that she had saved for yontef, right? And the rov passes that it's kosher because there was a whole shiloh. And then someone asked him, but it's against the Ramo. The Ramo said that it's trade, this and this and this shaylah. So he says, I would rather deal with the Ramo in the world to come than with a poor old lady. Yeah. The idea being, again, it's Sholem and Emes. That's the idea. The idea is that, I'm not saying that the Rov was right or the Rov was wrong, but the Musar Haskel, the moral of the story is that when there is a flexibility, when I'm not sure, I'm allowed to take in consideration the suffering of the poor old lady. But what about if you are certain that it's rape? Can you then take in consideration the feeling of the poor old lady? No, you can't.
But is Hillel, in his statement by Kalanov, is he compromising or is he simply saying the emes is, according to Torah standards, a Kalanov Chasuda? In other words,
under the circumstances that people are so sensitive to the opinions of others, which is wrong. In the ideal world, we wouldn't be so sensitive to the opinions of others. Each one would know what his obligation is and what he has to do. But in our imperfect world, we are sensitive to what other people say. So therefore, don't make him feel badly and tell him a lie. And that is the Derech HaTorah in this imperfect world. Is this the Derech HaTorah in the perfect world? No! Does the Torah want you to lie? No, the Torah wants you to say the truth. But in these circumstances, the Torah would agree to bend the truth because of the imperfection of the world. So the point is that realizing that there is an imperfect situation, and in an imperfect situation I'm allowed to bend the truth. Okay?
Does that mean if I have a halacha saying in kashrus that the chachila is also to eat it, and b'di'evid, its mother? So, and the b'di'evid case happened. So, there's no reason that I should be machmir, according to Hill? I mean, the truth is that...
You should always be machmir. But when there is an old lady suffering, you are allowed to rely on the b'di'evid. Why?
No, but let's say for myself, it's b'di'evid and I don't want to eat it.
You have no right to eat it.
No,
you have no right to
it. It was a b'di'evid case. No, not b'di'evid, what the halacha is, but it shouldn't be like that, but if it fell in... You know,
oh, that's what you mean, b'lachar amaisa b'di'evid, not as a psako fool.
Right.
Yeah.
So, is now the emes, since that's the case, I have no reason. You know, maybe it's milk and meat mixed together, maybe it's not, so maybe I shouldn't eat it. But since b'di'evid, that's what the Torah said, that's the halacha, so does that mean there's no reason to be machmir?
Yeah, right. I mean, if that's the halacha, once it's done, like bitul b'roiv, according to most opinions, you have no reason to be machmir. Right. So that means that lachar amaisa, you have no reason to be machmir at all.
It's a little different. Isn't that a little different over there? Because whether they say b'di'evid and lefachila, usually the b'di'evid is the ikar hadin, the lefachila is only coming for to be machmir to the kashrus for the shi'as.
Well, not necessarily. This is not so poshut what you're saying, that the b'di'evid is the ikar hadin. Not necessarily. Sometimes it's not that way. On what?
Remember, right? He says that there's an inyan if the meat falls into milk or soup and it can be eaten out the halacha. Mina shamayim, there's in terms of the nitzaitis whatever is in there that it should be eaten. In other words, not only
it should be eaten. I never saw yet. The dafke should be eaten.
It should be eaten because in other words,
it was meant for you,
it
sir.
It was meant that it could be done under the circumstances, and it would require a special situation. Therefore, the halacha is giving you a way to do biru or whatever you one does.
So you shouldn't throw it out. Your bedafke shouldn't throw it out. Interesting.
Way for us to pursue the shalom of the emes.
The what?
What should be our pursuit? The shalom and the emes.
We pasken like Hillel. No, but you mean are we allowed to lie in order to make somebody feel good and not to tell them the absolute truth? That's for sure. That's Allah.
No,
that's Allah
for myself. In other words, when we daven, so we daven to see shalom.
Yeah. Well, that's for sure. I mean, Shama is not against Sholem. It just means that he's right. Of course. I mean, he's at a level that Sholem and Emes should be one. There should be a contradiction.
It always feels about Emes, that's the point. It always feels like directed towards Sholem, and it feels like not towards Emes.
Yeah, but, yeah, all right. Okay,
yeah, we do say entirely different out of the Emes, so...
Yeah. Okay, that's... Yeah.
In regards to the Machlokes in today, Brock in New York...
Yeah. So let me come to the punchline here. I'll tell you what the punchline of the whole thing is. I'll tell you where I got it from. The first time it occurred to me was when I heard about a certain letter that I had heard of, according to the first information which I received, it's a genuine letter. written by the Tzemach Tzedek. The Tzemach Tzedek, Lubavitcher Rebbe. Who was it? The third? The third Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek. When I, after I heard about the letter, I used to have a Seder in Tanya, so I had my own Lubavitcher source. So I asked him, did you ever hear about the letters? They said, yes, and it's a fake. But I don't care whether it's a fake or it's not a fake. What it says is 100% MS. Listen to this. Listen to what the letter says. The letter says that the Tzemach Tzedek writes to someone, Bou nachzik toive la goin mivilne. Let's thank the goin of Vilna. Sheil moleyu, did you ever hear it? Sheil moleyu, because if it wouldn't be the machloikes of the goin of Vilna against the Hasidim would have become, and I remember exactly the Nusa which he uses, a bunch of another sect with no shaykhes to Yiddishkeit, they would have abandoned Yiddishkeit. This is what I heard that Tzemach Tzedek says. And what I told you, the Babisher say that lo yoyo v'lo nivro, it's not true. But the message is 100% true. Why? What was the point? The point here is the following. Let me give you another example, we'll come back to this point. Maise Shehoyo. I'm a witness to this mitzvah. A certain person, very big, he was learning in Mira Yeshiva, and at a certain point, we are going back 25, maybe 30 years ago, he had a problem, he had a large family, he needed a job, and the only job available was in a yeshiva tichonit. Right? In a yeshiva tichonit. And his Rebbe was Reb Chatzko Sanya Levashon, the Yeshiva in Hebroner Yeshiva. So he knew that Reb Chatzko Sarne was the biggest fighter against the high schools in Eretz Yisrael, against the yeshivot tichoniot. He fought it like a lion, that they shouldn't open up. High schools in Eretz Yisrael, the Mudechol, he was against it. So he told his wife, it's out of the question, I'm not going to take a job in a yeshivot tichoni to teach, impossible. So he said, you have to do it because we are starving. And it was a difficult time. So he said, okay, I'll go ask the Rosh Hashiva. He knew for sure the Rosh Hashiva will say no. He came to Reb Chatzko Sarne, and he presents to him the situation. He says, listen, my wife is pushing me, so I just came to, I wanted to, you know. So he says, and the Rosh Hashiva looks at him, says, of course take the job. He says, but, you know, you are the one who always fight, you know, how can I take the job? And he uses in Yiddish, said the Rosh Yeshiva shreit toch halemoni, the Rosh Yeshiva always screams against the yeshivot tichoniyot. So he said, I have to scream, but of course you have to go and teach them. So maybe think, what does it mean, I have to scream, but of course you have to go teach them? If you scream, that means that you don't want their existence. If you allow your talmidim to go teach in yeshivot tichoniyot, you are strengthening them. So aren't you working on contradictory positions? You are allowing your best talmidim to teach in yeshivot tichoniyot and you scream against it? No. Simple. The point is like this. If nobody will scream against the yeshivot tichoniyot, that would be terrible. A lot of kids who would have no shaykhes to the secular world will abandon Torah and going to secular studies, a tremendous danger. On the other hand, is there a need for yeshivot tichoniyot? Is there a need for a yeshiva with a high school in Eretz Yisrael? Nobody can deny it. Because if you don't have it, you'll have thousands of young people being lost because they will go get secular studies somewhere. And where are they going to go? To the non-religious institutions. So is there a need for a yeshivot tichoniyot? Of course. But if I say that there is a need for yeshivot tichoniyot, I'm the Rosh Yeshiva of Hebron Yeshiva. If I say there is a need for yeshivot tichoniyot, you know what it's going to do to the Torah world? Everybody will use my statement as a justification that they can abandon Torah. So what is my obligation? What position should I take? I know that yeshivot tichoniyot will be built. At least if I scream against it, there will be a guarantee to balance both sides. But if I don't scream against it, then our side lost. And that is vaday wrong. You're this position. Now, I have no doubt that that's what Reb Chatzko Sarne meant. I have to scream in order to keep the balance. Because if I don't scream, the whole yeshiva world will become a high school. Right? On the other hand, do I have to strengthen those yeshivot tichoniot? Of course, they have a purpose in the world. I believe that this is what the Tzemach Tzedek meant. That the Goyen of Vilna, what did he think, the Goyen of Vilna? He really thought that the Hasidim were Shabsai Tzvinix. It's hard for me to believe that the Vilna Goyen made such a mistake, because we know that it's not that way. Hasidism did not become another Shabsai Tzvi sect. So are we going to say that the Goyen made a mistake and now we realize that he made a mistake? So how come he was so anti-Hasidic? He was anti-Hasidic because he knew where it's going to lead. That Hasidim serve a purpose, it saved hundreds of thousands of Jews. Without Hasidism, you know that the Torah world at the time had lost the masses. The masses had been lost to the Torah world, because they had no shaykhes, no connection, and Hasidism saved them. It grabbed them. It made them important all of a sudden. It allowed them to think of themselves as having a place within Yiddishkeit. On the other hand, if you are going to say, yeah, Hasidism, that's great, you know what would happen? The union of Limud HaTorah would be little by little lost, forgotten, because the focus of Hasidism is not Limud HaTorah. So therefore he had to balance. So he took the extreme position that in order that both positions should exist and both positions should fulfill their purpose in the world. But if the Vilna Goyen wouldn't have said that, he would say, you know, Hasidism is okay, but I, you know, you shouldn't be a Hasid. So Hasidism would have taken over the world, yeshivas would have been closed, and that's it. That would be the end of it. I believe that, as an example, Lubavitch, right? Again, it's not important what I really believe. That's completely irrelevant. You have something to sell. You have to understand this. You are the salesman. You are the hasbara, the public relations man to the world. So, don't put down Lubavitch. Never. Whatever you think is secondary, but don't put down Lubavitch. Because if you put down Lubavitch, in his mind, you're putting down Yiddishkeit in general. The idea is that whatever advantages and good things they have, Lubavitch, they have one danger. And that is the danger that Rav Shach is extremely aware of. The danger that a lot of people base their whole Yiddishkeit on the Lubavitch Rebbe. Now, you can't blame Rav Shach for doubting that Lubavitch Rebbe is Mashiach. Yeah, you can't blame him for doubting that. Let's say after 120 years, right, you know what's going to happen to a lot of people? Chas v'sholem. They'll say, that's it? Then my Yiddishkeit is gone. There is such a danger. There is such a danger. If Rav Shach fights it, there will be two attitudes that will develop. Some people will say, oh, well, so Lubavitch was wrong, but Rav Shach was right, so MS was still part of Yiddishkeit. But if nobody would have screamed against Lubavitch, it could be that all those thousands of innocent, naive people who thought that the whole Yiddishkeit is the Lubavitch Rebbe, once after 120 years, they'll actually abandon everything. And like this, they won't abandon it because they'll say, oh, you see, so we were wrong, but Rav Shach was right, so it's still MS. Or there will be other people, and probably that will be the majority, who will say, you know why the Lubavitch Rebbe wasn't Mashiach? Because Rav Shach destroyed the Mashiach, because of the Machloikes, that destroyed it. That's great, that's exactly what Rav Shach wants. Why? What does he have to gain? He has to gain that as long as you have a justification why he's not the Mashiach, they won't be lost to Yiddishkeit. So what comes out according to this? That Rav Shach is taking an extreme position, right, in order to maintain the balance, in order to allow Klal Yisrael not to lose in case the other side is wrong, like the Goyen with the Hasidim, like in the other example of Chatzar Sane with the position of the Yeshivot Tichoniot, which means sometimes you have to take an extreme position for the sake of the well-being of Klal Yisrael. Neither one of them is happy in the machloikes, in the fight. But once you are convinced that that is the right thing to do at this time, you are bound by your conviction that that's the way to be noyeg. Now, in this way, number one, you will raise the respect. If you are able to convince the people of this idea, you will raise the respect that you have for Doylin. It's as if you can present it in a way that the Goyen, like, sacrificed himself for the sake of the future of Torah in the world, or that the Rav Shach sacrifices himself for the sake of the thousands of people who would chas v'sholem lose their Yiddishkeit in case he wouldn't come out against it. Which means that it's a position, an intentional position, that is created by the circumstances, by the other extreme. And I was, Libavitch developed into one extreme for their reasons. But you have to have a counterforce in order to keep the balance. Yeah.
Two questions. First of all, by saying this, you are saying that Rav Shach is not 100% sure about his position. He has a doubt.
You allow for the possibility of the doubt, which means maybe Lubavitcher Rebbe is or isn't whatever he claims to be.
You're allowing for the doubt in Rav Shach's mind. And if you're doing that, that means that on the side that he's wrong,
yeah,
Rav Shach is taking a very big risk.
Exactly. He's taking a risk for the sake of the well-being of Klal Yisrael in the future. Isn't a heroic act? What?
Does he have a right to take?
What do you mean? If he sees himself, in other words, if he sees that that is the position that he should take, does he have a right not to take such a position? That's the question. In other words, he sees that that's the way to act under the circumstances. Okay. There is a danger that Klal Yisrael is going to one direction. You have to pull him to the other direction. I see clearly that the only way to pull him to the other direction is by coming out with an extreme position that will create a machloikis. But it will save Klal Yisrael.
The only reason to pull them to an extreme position is if he is on the side that he's right. That's the only reason to pull them away is on the side that he's right, but on the side that he's wrong.
But remember, it's a sophic. But I have to take it as a sophic. Right? In that sophic, do I have a right to sit back and say, maybe he will drown, maybe he won't drown, so I won't jump in. Maybe he will be saved. If somebody's a sophic drowning, I have to jump in if I can
side,
swim.
But on the other side that he's wrong, he's drowning.
So that's what I'm saying. So it's Shayach that hundreds of thousands of people are drowning. He sees
but it's
this
the
people.
But he's doing the drowning. That's what I'm saying.
Just the opposite.
On
he's
the
saving
side,
them.
On
that's
the
what I'm saying.
Side
so,
on the side, I mean, on
okay.
The side
remember,
right?
Remember
he's
that.
Drowning.
Right, but remember. That I am not saying whether he is certain or he's not certain. I'm just allowing the fact that he can say, even if it's a sophic, I'm not sure whether it is a sophic or not.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. By saying this position, you're presenting the possibility that it's a sophic in Rav Shach's mind.
It could be yes, could be not. But it's irrelevant because even if it's a sophic, he would be bound to act this way.
That's my question.
100%. Even if it's a sophic. Right? Did the Goyen know for sure that the Hasidim will become a Shabbat Tzvisek? It's impossible to say sure. Nobody's ever sure. But even the Sophic binds me to that position. I have to act with that position. I have no choice.
Well, that's emphasize the bad that comes out of such a thing. This Machlokes creates a tremendous amount of sinner.
100%. And I'm sure that he waited. I'm sure that he realized that he came to the conclusion that the sine is a small price to pay for the whatever the mile is that he sees.
Okay.
For instance, what?
I'm assuming though that the average person in the North American setting, his exposure to Lubavitch should be positive, and his exposure to Rav Shach has been at best negative.
You're right.
Rav Shach is a person, in the eyes of the average person, as the New York Times and all the others have reported, is a person who they see as responsible for bitterness, hatred, violence, gittin, troubles in families. It was all reported in great...
You're absolutely right.
So,
you're
in other words, he's taken... I'm trying to sort of understand. He's taken a position to save people from losing Yiddishkeit at the expense of totally destroying the image that the Gadol needs to be credible.
Exactly, but that's the idea.
No, but
I mean,
no,
it's a short-term, terrible price.
No, but I'm saying there's no long-term gain either. Because if
why
person,
not?
Because the person's puzzle. The average guy in America who sees Rav Shach
Khomeini next to him, and it's all one big Olam Chabur in the Middle East.
You are right, but that is the problem with public relations. You know, it's our public relations should try to express the danger of Lubavitch, and I'm not saying to be against Lubavitch, but the danger that some people, you can even say the Lubavitcher Rebbe never told anybody that he's Mashiach.
He never did.
But the point is that there are thousands and thousands of people who are convinced that he's Mashiach. Right?
But
what will it do to them after 120 years? If he's not, maybe
he
is.
Does not present that position.
What?
He attacks the Rebbe.
Right. He doesn't present personally.
So how else are you going to present the other position in order that both extremes should be there in order to maintain the balance? How else are you going to say?
To say, be cautious.
What?
Why can't you push a position? Be cautious.
Be cautious. It won't work. You know, it's only extremes work against extremes. Let me take historically. There was a machloikis between Rabbi Yonos and Naibshitz and Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Did you ever hear of this machloikis? Rabbi Yonos and Naibshitz and Rabbi Yaakov Emden. And you say, Rabbi Yonos and Naibshitz was such a nice person, right? At tzaddik. Everybody knew him as an honest, fine, a goyen adir, right? And because Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who was an equal tzaddik and an equal godel, right? And he found, right, or somebody brought to him a kameya, right, an amulet that supposedly it was written by Rabbi Yonos and Naibshitz. And it made reference to something, some belief of the Shabbosai Tzvi. Now, did Rabbi Yaakov Emden have any doubt in his mind? Right. That was he at least uncertain? Perhaps he's not at fault, Rabbi Yonos and Ibsen. I mean, it's mistaken that at least he had a doubt. I mean, he wasn't certain that he was guilty. Does he really believe that Rabbi Yonos and Ibsen was a Shabbosai Tzvi person? Hard to believe. So what was he fighting? He wasn't fighting personally Rabbi Yonos and Ibshitz. He was fighting the perception of the people that a godel can be a godel betorah and still accept Shabbosai Tzvi ideology. That's what he was fighting. How did it come out? By personally attacking Rabbi Yonos and Ibshitz. So what other method did he have? Is he going to say, listen, be careful with these things? Nobody will listen to him if you say be careful. You have to take an extreme position. Remember, human beings, the masses, 99.9% of human beings, don't hear gray areas, balanced positions. They only hear extremes. That's not human nature. You only hear extremes. Extremes, so if there is one extreme, you must take on the other extreme in order to balance it. You have no other choice. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden had no choice but to attack Rabbi Yonos and Ibshitz personally, right? And if you go back, listen, we can go through other machlokes. Did you ever hear of the machlokes between the Ribbe Rav and the Maralbach? Major machlokes in the 16th century. Maralbach, didn't hear the Rabbi Rav, maybe we should talk about it. The machlokes in Klal Yisrael. And what was the positions of each one, and why did each one take such an extreme positions against each other?
I remember hearing a mice, whether or not it's true, I don't know, but the idea behind it is Emmet, that after the Yaakov Emden and the Yonos and Ibshitz, both Nifter, one of them came to a godel of the next door in a dream, and so the godel asked him, at the end of the day, who's up in
Canaan
and who's down in Canaan?
Yeah.
He said, we're both up in Canaan. But all of our followers are all down in Canaan.
Yeah, that's the price that you pay. But that the good or
that
the price that you pay is the sinner, and that's not L'shem Shomayim. You're absolutely right. That's the price you pay. The question is, do you have the right to say, I'm not willing to pay that price? Right? Now, remember, as much as we say, machloikes, that's terrible. Machloikes, it's terrible. Think about it. Machloikes saves Klal Yisrael. Now, please don't react until you think about it.
The Gemara says about Rehil and Shammai that the machloikes was never out of hate.
Exactly,
and yet
exactly.
This creates hate.
Because let's take the other position. Let's say we would be so aware not to make a machloikes and that anything. You say something else. Listen, for the sake of no machloikes, I'll give in to you. Somebody else says, come as up with another. For the sake of no machloikes, I'll give in to you. What would have happened with Klal Yisrael? It wouldn't have existed anymore. The reason why Klal Yisrael exists is because people were not afraid of a machlokes, knowing what the price is. Right. So don't think the machlokes is as destructive. Temporarily, it's extremely destructive, and we pay a terrible price. But it's because of machlokes that we have a Klal Yisrael, because machlokes expresses this idea of, if I am certain, I will stand up for what I think is right. Just for the sake of my well-being, not to get into trouble, so I'll give in to what you say.
That's easier historically. If I look at the Goyen and the Balatanya, I'm looking at the Goyen and the Balatanya, and in hindsight, I'm seeing two, you know, these people are fighting with each other, but when you're in the middle of it, and one is saying to the other, essentially, your puzzle, or right. Your bottle of a hutzel, it's not the same thing. When you look at it in hindsight, you see when it's on a term of Yaakov, and I'm not really in a position to take a side, but Bizman Azeh, you have to take a side. I mean, you're not, the average person isn't left out of the machlokes.
Well, I would say the opposite.
Like said, I don't have a problem.
I would say the opposite. Today, most people are outside of the machlokes. Just the opposite. The people involved in the machlokes, there is nothing you can tell them. They take a position, they are paying the price. They are the ones that
I'm
are.
I'm talking within Yeshiva. I'm talking within the from community.
There is no way. There is nothing you can do. I'm telling you that this line should be given not to the Yeshivish world, to the outsiders, to the secular or like the Frume Jew who has no contact with Gdoilim. He is not a Libavitcher. He's not a Ben Torah. He just hears about it. He just read it in the New York Times. That's what I'm saying. It's that person who just read about it, and you have to present it to him as heroes. You know, the Bali Machloikas are really heroes who are fighting for the future of Klal Yisrael. And the people, the little people, are, like you said, who get involved and fight, I mean, fight, so that's the price. They know that they have to pay the price of the little people not understanding what it's all about, yeah?
So mostly it's saying that the Machloikas of Shach now recently with the Chilonim was in order to bring them into the Parsha. To fight them to call them names, rabbits and Hazirim, in order to bring them into the Parsha Machlokes, so that at least arguing about being Yiddish kind.
100%. I have no doubt that the reason why he spoke sharply against them is to shake them up.
He sacrificed his own personal.
And he's willing to pay the price. What do you think? You don't think that it would have been much more pleasant for Rav Shach to say, "Oh, we are all good Jews. Let's go and kiss each other and hold each other." It's much more appealing because Rav Shach knows what will sell well and what will be written up well in the New York Times. He knows that. He's a very sharp person, right? So why didn't he do it? Why did he do the difficult thing? He wanted to express the extreme position in order to shake up, and of course there will be sine. But he says that this sine, this kine, this fight, it's only temporary. In the long run, good things will come out of it. That's safe for this time. The good things will come out at the end.
If this is their position, then what right do we have to sort of call their bluff?
Who?
If Rav Shach is putting out this extreme position, so we're going out telling it. Don't worry about Rashad's position. You don't got to take it at face value. Don't worry about it. If he's giving over this message of being extreme for a reason, because he wants people to hear it as an extreme message, so what gives me the right to go in there as a rabbi of a community, a rabbi of a day school, and come in and say, guys, you know this?
Because you are the PR man for Torah. You understand? You have a new responsibility. You don't have to sell him neither Rav Shach. You see, if you are speaking to Bnei Torah, you have no right to say that. Mm-hmm. But if you're speaking to people who are neither Lubavitch nor Bnei Torah, you are just
the Yeshivish guy going to become Chabad, and you told them, then this guy in the community, other rabbi, this guy in the community who wasn't sure which way he's going to go now, and now he's going to say, no, I'm sure there's nothing against it, I'll go.
The guys I'm talking about that you are supposed to explain to them this are people who will become neither one way nor the other. All you are trying to do is to give them a good image about Rav Shach and Bnei Torah and what Yiddishkeit is and what Torah is. That's all you have to be concerned with to these people. Create a positive image, right? So if you create that image of heroes of history willing to pay the price of sin, that's a different image. That makes them, you elevated them already. Yeah.
One
other point
that we don't see
that
Moshe made
this
stand.
We don't see anybody make this stand.
Against
Lubavitch? Moshe was on the scene, he was right there. He knew
what he was.
By the Satmar, you do see, for instance.
Satmar Rav never.
Satmar
Rav never said a word.
Against what? Against the.
Satmar Rav had kind of said, but you're talking about Rabban Patrol's previous Rebbe. We're talking in terms of the Shitas of this Dor, the Minster and others who went to Menachem Avil. It's clear, Rabban, that there's a relationship in the United States, that this perception has not carried over this approach. So you see that in America, that Gedolim there, at the Yehuda convention, it was like not mentioned. It was deliberately. So I forget who it was when it was like, I'm not talking about it. Finished. Doesn't mean the people didn't have opinions, but you didn't. No one saw this type of
the sharpness,
sharp type in the Machlokes. You never saw that. In fact, there were letters that were back and forth from Rav Terebin and Rav Moshe on various Yonim. Rav Moshe born
very respectful.
Yeah,
very respectful.
Very mildly. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. The thing is that personally. They all tell you. I mean, I have no doubt that you'll ask the Rav Shach about his godless in Torah, right? He will tell you. You know, it's not. Don't say it to anybody. Probably he will say, but you know, he's probably a Golom Godel. But you know, I know. But the thing is, when you are fighting the outcome of it, right? You can say it. You have no right to say it, because the moment you say it, you should know that the Gilavach is a Golom Godel, but he's making a mistake. You see, you are taking a compromise position. You're not taking an extreme position. And to fight extremism, you have to take on an extreme position.
Not as a position for PR, but as your personal belief for what it's worth. If Rav Shach and the Babish Rebbe were to be alone, private in a room together, do you think the antagonism would still be there, or do you think they would each recognize the fact that underneath the public position, there is no antagonism?
It's a difficult thing to say. It's a difficult thing to say. Personally, I think that it wouldn't change either one's mind. That's what I think. They would really not change their minds. I think Rav Shach is a very strong person. Like, he has strong beliefs, very, very strong beliefs. So that's Rav Babitzer Rebbe. So that all Gedolim who take strong positions are people who have that feeling of certainty. So I don't think it would be shaken up by just speaking to the other person and seeing what
would
they see.
Would they
talk to each other in the first place?
What?
Will they talk to each other?
At this point, they wouldn't.
They drink each other's wine.
Never possible.
Thank you.